stand by to receive our transmission.
It's Roast with K.M. Bell and Tom. They're your Roastmasters.
Because I've been going through my own little existential moments, not really certain if whatever I can add to the conversation can help. Things have been sort of in stasis for a while, as you well know, and we've been all dealing with the creeping fascism, the danger in our lives that we all experience. So how are you doing?
Oh, well, if you're going to come at it from that direction, I guess I'm fine.
That's the spirit. That's exactly what I want to hear.
Yeah. No, yep.
Life is glasses half empty, but I might also have bowel cancer. Ba-dum. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I got.
What do you got?
I got a bottle of James T. Kirk bourbon sipping whiskey.
No. Really? Yeah, there's such a thing?
Yeah. I've got it right here in my hand. Here, listen.
Oh, shit. I don't know if you know that or not.
It's straight bourbon whiskey. It's 12 years old.
Yeah.
It is put together by, I'm trying to read, but it's dark in here because it's the middle of the night when we're recording this. Batch 1, bottle 683. Star Trek whiskey. They also have a vodka called 10 Forward. I don't drink vodka. And that's the wrong ship. But this is an elegant.
Just give it to me.
It is an. Oh, I don't have it because I don't. This was ridiculously expensive for me because I don't buy expensive booze. And I have tasted it, and now it is on the shelf, and there it probably will remain for a very long time. But I've been fighting this this bronchial infection. I thought I had the flu here a couple weeks back, right? Turns out basically what I have is an upper respiratory infection, and I had severe food poisoning, which when you add it all together is the flu. Doesn't matter that the flu virus wasn't in me. I had the flu.
You had the flu.
And so.
Well, then you lost. Okay. So you're a third of yourself.
No. Sadly, no. But. Anyway, I'm looking at this bottle, and I'm thinking about hot toddies, and I'm like, am I going to put something that caused this much work? They don't sell this in Utah. All of our liquor stores are controlled by the state, the nanny state. And so you can't get this here. And so without, you know, getting anybody in trouble, it was smuggled.
Did you? Oh, I thought you had, what? Did you have to go to Idaho, or did you have to go?
No, it had to be special ordered, pre-ordered about 6 months out. So I had a friend from out of town do that for me and a couple of other people.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah, and then had to have it shipped under cover of night. And basically what it means is if I want a hot toddy, I got to run to the liquor store and get some Jim Beam or something that I don't give a shit about.
See you bastards that are out there. Oh, stand by a second. Hold on a second, please.
Hold on. There's a kind of hush all over the world. Tonight, all over the world.
More signal. Nope. Sorry, didn't work. Sorry. Whoops. We had a big pile of whoops.
That's okay.
Didn't happen.
No. So anyway.
Did not. Happen.
I'm looking at this knowing that it would make my throat feel better. And also knowing that ounce for ounce, it's probably the most expensive whiskey I've ever bought in my life. James T. Kirk.
I'm struggling with the vow I made to the rheumatologist. It's just, she goes, you have to take a small amount of alcohol now.
Oh, yeah?
How small? And she like puts her fingers like, very close together. I go, oh, well, at least we legalized pot in Oregon.
They've taken it away, you're saying?
Is it? Well, you know, it hasn't really stopped me. I mean, you know, I still enjoy of the vine. I still enjoy of that, but not near anywhere near what it was before.
Sure.
Nope. Nowhere near at all.
No. Where I barely drink. Like, when people ask me if I drink, I am telling the truth more if I say no than if I say yes.
Mm-hmm.
This was memorabilia that just happens to have just happens to be 80 proof, you know.
Yeah. If I inherited something from my folks or something, I would definitely enjoy it. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
if it's memorabilia. So so Mia Love is in trouble.
No, she's not.
She's going to be fine, isn't she?
Yeah, she's going to be fine.
Elected, isn't she?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't want to say that. What I am allergic to most often is the histrionic happy dance that Democrats out here do in the last moments
before they get slammed.
You know, well, that's the thing about Ben, the dude who's running against Mia, is he's a good guy. He's a really good guy, and he's a good guy if you're a Republican. He's just a good guy, really solid, super center of the road, you know. But, you know, once upon a time, I had a show on our big radio station out here, and I could not get a Democrat on to save my life. And he came on. You know, he had balls when he was running for county mayor. What's that?
Oh, gallant.
Oh, yeah. He came
on when they didn't, when nobody else did.
Nobody would. And because I was a tough interview to Democrats. I wouldn't. They weren't there to be mollycoddled. They were there to answer questions. And he showed, and it ended up turning into a giant mollycoddle because he answered all the questions really fast. And the next thing you know, we just sat around talking about how cool it was to be Scottish. And then when he was running for county mayor a little while later, because he was a state senator at the time, when he was running for county mayor of Salt Lake County, our capital county, if you will, he asked several times to come on to the Left Show.
Oh, my.
To which I kept saying, no, no, you may not. You have to win your election.
No, we have to win your election first. You don't want to come on here. They'll use it against you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. And it wouldn't be. We've had guests on the Left Show before where we've toned it down a little bit just to be polite to them. And yet, you know, all you have to do is listen to last week's episode to know how wickedly inappropriate we are.
One more second.
Why do birds suddenly appear every time I am near? Just like me, they want to be close to me. All right, what keeps happening?
Okay, I was checking my levels, and I was we're both inappropriately hot.
Okay.
Which there's nothing wrong with that, because, like, in life, it's good to be hot.
It is. It's a burden. It is a burden.
It's a terrible burden. In fact, it's a sign of shame every time I leave a mirror. They used to be my best friend, and then I found other people. I don't know what that means.
I don't know.
That's just silly. That's just nonsense.
So
it's been a whirlwind around here, and
I've been having a crisis of conscience.
I am having a crisis of conscience. How can I add to the conversation? Can I really talk about that hasn't been talked about before? And I'm very much of the mind that if I cannot push the conversation along, if I cannot create any more depth, we seem to be in this. We have been in this crisis, and we have been in the jaws of this crisis, but there hasn't been any movement. Now, within the last several weeks, and especially within the last several days, and especially within the last couple of days, we have gone from potential political assassination to murdering of people of the Jewish faith, and a further escalation against immigrants. Against a single political party, to a point where we are really, we're well within the shadow of fascism, well within, and we're actually training troops at the border to fire upon people who are at the most are going to throw rocks at them. If at the worst, that's what the narcissist in chief says.
No one's thrown rocks before. This is not the first caravan. Rocks. We've had caravans.
Rocks. This doesn't happen.
We have had caravans coming up through Central and South America, you know, through Mexico all the way up since the early 90s. By the time they make it here, Mexico has peeled off most of them and resettled them in their country, which they have also offered to do. And some have taken them up on it and some have not. You know, America's... You watch the pundits get up and talk tough to these people that are coming up on foot in the wilderness as mm-hmm. though they were going to hear that the president's being an asshole. But there's no rocks being thrown. These people are coming up to legally apply for asylum in the States.
True.
And they've tried to turn it into, no, they have. You know what? They have turned it into a midterm issue. And it's going to be that. And in a lot of cases where we don't think so, it is going to work. You know, racism will out. It always does. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that there's this fucking blue tide everybody is so excited about. But man, white supremacy cannot be killed. No matter how hard we have tried, here it is again. You know,
and as exemplified in the Florida race between Andrew Gillum and Ron DeSantis, this little bit.
Mr. DeSantis has spoken. Hey, first of all, he's got neo-Nazis helping him out in the state. He has spoken at racist conferences. He's accepted a contribution and would not return it from someone who referred to the former president of the United States as a Muslim. When asked to return that money, he said no. He's using that money to now fund negative ads. Now, I'm not calling Mr. DeSantis a racist. I'm simply saying the racists believe he's a racist.
But, Mr. DeSantis.
And that's exactly what it is, isn't it?
That dude is so smooth.
He's good. Stacey Abrams is good. He's
very
good.
Very, very good.
They're good. They're good. You need to be good. Here's the other thing that gets me about this too, Jeff, is the fact that we've always got to be good. We've got to be perfect. We've got to be 100% perfect. We can't have any kind of errors. Yet those other people can double down, fuck up, and do every single thing wrong. They can be hateful fucks, and yet still, somehow, they get elected. To get elected, and they think that they are entitled to the chair that for life. And to me, I've been thinking a little bit about what you've been talking about and what we've all been talking about over the last couple of years is that's kind of like this sock, you know, put some socks on our fist and we kind of lightly punch at these bastards who put like, you know, steel, you know, brass knuckles
sure.
inside their boxing gloves and they punch back.
Sure.
That Democrats,
the big blue sissy,
the big blues believe in asking permission. We ask for the power. Republicans take it. They steal it. They grab it. That's what they do. They don't feel they may go out and they may go through all of the motions, but when it comes right down to it, they know the very base movements. They know the very, very base heart of the electorate that they want. And they appeal to them and they go after them with a racism and they scoop that out and they get that power and they take it. And in a really close election, when it comes down to 50 plus one, every, you know, Democrats at 50, the Republicans at 50, you only need that one vote, like just like you did in Virginia. They take it. They take it. They just take it. They steal it. That's what they do. And that is the difference in thinking what Democrats and Republicans do. We govern by permission. They govern by theft. And I don't know. That's what I've been thinking about lately.
Well, you know, you're not wrong. Between, you know, gerrymandering, we're watching the voter purge. I don't know mm-hmm. if you heard or not, but the Native Americans up in North Dakota... that have been disenfranchised by the voter ID law up there have had their case dismissed, is thrown out of court.
So they can't fight.
They can't vote.
They can't vote.
Thousands of people disenfranchised. I mean,
They were going to get IDs. Weren't they getting IDs?
ID has to have an address. They have post office boxes.
Yeah, because they don't have addresses.
Right.
They never have had addresses.
Right.
So suddenly now this is an issue. It's an issue because the election is close.
Yeah.
It's kind of like what Brian Kemp, who's going against Stacey Abrams in Georgia, said. And this, he was caught off mic in this.
As worried as we were going into the start of early voting with the literally tens of millions of dollars that they are putting behind to get out on the vote efforts for their base, a lot of that with absentee ballot requests, they have just an unprecedented number of that, which is something that continues to concern us, especially if everybody uses and exercises their right to vote, which they absolutely can, and mails those ballots in. We got to have heavy turnout to offset that.
We have to have a bigger offset. We have a problem with voting. Voting has never advantaged the Republicans. The fewer people that vote, the better for them.
Right.
They're disadvantaged when the more people vote, when more and more and more people are given not only just the right to vote, but the opportunity to vote, they lose. Because in the marketplace of ideas, they don't have any.
I got nothing to argue. You're absolutely right. It is. And we have, as a party, for years, decades, just rolled over, asked for another.
Thank you. Please, can I have some more?
Yeah. We are the big blue sissy. We take our licks. We keep on trying to explain.
It's frustrating.
Yeah. What was it? What's his name said? When they go low, we kick them.
Oh, Eric Holder. The former AG.
By which I mean metaphorically, he says in the next five words. That being the part that doesn't get played by anybody. In fact, I'll tell you what, I saw that on, I think it was probably CNN, but they played the clip of Kick'em, and then the explanation of what he said next took longer than it would have taken had they just played the whole fucking clip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that was awesome. But
we're the mob.
Hmm?
But we're the mob.
Right.
We're the caravan.
We're the drum circle. We're the goddamn patchouli cloud. You know?
We're the pumpkin spice latte.
Ugh.
I don't get that either. I don't like that.
I don't either. It's like somebody just debauched a perfectly good snickerdoodle the other day by putting pumpkin spice frosting on it. Snickerdoodle, the perfect fucking cookie.
You fucking monsters.
I know. Like animals, is what they are. They're just animals.
They are fucking animals. That's what they are when they think about that.
And they should pull themselves out of the animal because that's not right. Anyway, fucking animal. It's all.
Jesus.
So, okay. So we're coming up as if I drop this tomorrow.
Yeah.
We got the Friday, the Saturday, the Sunday, the Monday. So we got 4 days.
Now, of course we can do another. Oh, never mind. I know. Just hold on a second here. Right. Let's see. Where are we here? Where am I at? 11 minutes? Really? I just got nuked here with a sound effect. So let me fix that. Okay. I'll fix that. That's 11 minutes in. Okay.
You're at 11? Okay. I'm at 19.
What's that?
I said you're at
19, but when I started up again, it's a different clock. So we had two or three clips. I'll glue together. I think the first one was 4 minutes. Yeah.
I'm just going to make sure we sound good and post the whole goddamn thing. I'll send little songs when you took breaks.
I'll send mine to you so you can hear it and be the judge.
But you see, the problem that I have with your version of the file is that you sound fantastic and I sound like a tin can. But when I edit it down, I sound fantastic.
But I sound like a tin can when I play the little audio clips.
That's true. I don't know what the hell that's all about, because your voice sounds great.
Oh, thank you.
There's a podcast that I listen to, Dear Hank and John, that you should just grab a couple of episodes and listen to, and you tell me whether or not they sound like they're in the same goddamn room, because they're not. They're thousands of miles apart, but they sound like they're in the same goddamn room.
I want that.
Yeah, I do too.
I want that.
That's going to cost money.
We don't have money.
It's got problems. Here in River
there
City.
There are problems in life. We have problems in life. There are things I can't talk about.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I'm sorry, buddy.
It's not... It's... We'll talk about it later.
Okay. Yeah, we probably should.
Okay. It's not like that. It's not like that. That. It's not that.
I screwed it too.
You're talking about the individuals. Yes. Know who I'm talking about.
Okay. So we'll move on. So we got 4 days. We have 4 days.
Yes, we have 4 days. Now we have 4 days left. Okay, so it's 11. Yeah, it's 10:29 your time. We have 4 days. Actually, 5 days. 5 days, 1 hour your time.
Right.
I've already canvassed my turf. I actually was able to go back and thank people for voting. That's something I think that's important.
That's new.
You really need to let people know how valuable it is. I wouldn't say that I like to think of myself as the concierge of voting, but I'd like to be able to go out there, give them a slate card, give them some. I don't have to do any pep talk. All I have to do is just open the door and they'll like unload on you and just go, "Fucking hey, where have you been?" It's just like we're in fucking Nazi land. We're in so much fucking trouble. And I go like right down here in River City. I know exactly what you're talking about, and. You know,
well, it starts with T, and that rhymes with rump.
Yeah, it starts with a capital trouble. So I think that here in this state, we have a fairly strong, you know, Democratic bent, which to me, it's always been over the last 10, 15 years, three counties, Washington, Clackamas, the ones we're in, and Multnomah, where Portland is. Now, Deschutes County, where Bend is, which is in the center of the state, is coming on very strong as a liberal stronghold soon. And there are other cities downstate that have, you know, blue counties. These are the ones that the red counties, 2/3, 7/8 of the state, fucking hate. Because they think that they own the goddamn place, and they think that, you know, we're the ones to blame. So no matter what, I love Eastern Oregon. I love those red counties. I love going there. It's fantastic. But they have an overabundant preponderance of Republicans. They have a guy who's running for governor against the current governor. The current governor is the person who took over for the previous governor, when the previous governor's girlfriend fucked up so bad, he was asked to step down. He decided, well, this is actually a good idea. I just won the election, but I'll step down anyway. Kate Brown took the position. She had to run at least one more time in order to keep the seat. And then once again for another 2-year term, now she's running. She has to go for a 4-year term. We do not have a lieutenant governor here in the state of Oregon. Huh. If you're the secretary of state, I believe, is that the chain of command? Then you become governor if the governor steps down. So she instituted a number of things, including even not just motor voter, stronger laws for people who are gay, bisexual, transgender, you know, lots of protection, not just for state workers, but for other people as well. And also this thing called Oregon Promise, where if you're a kid, you got really good grades, you don't have any money, you can go to community college for the first 2 years practically free.
Cool. I like that.
I mean, they're just a whole bunch of other things. So she's running up against this guy who is this like former orthopedic surgeon from Bend. Okay. This guy's named Newt Bueller. Okay. All right. He says one thing, he does another. He's completely your typical, you know, like golden boy for the Republicans, down to the goatee. He represents Bend so well. He moved from Bend to Tigard, which is about 2 or 3 miles away from where I live right here on the western side of the state. I don't know if he's resigned his chair, but I believe he forgot to tell his constituency he's no longer living in Bend. He's living here because he wants to be closer to Salem. Of course, because he probably feels he's going to get the job. And things are looking kind of iffy right now for the Democrats in the state house. We may be able to hold on to a majority. I don't think we're going to be able to get a supermajority. If we do, that's wonderful. All the things are pointing in our favor. But the governor, she's, you know, tell you what about Kay Brown. She's wonderful in a lot of ways. She just doesn't have the charismatic approach that so many top level politicians have, you know, and I don't know whether or not that's the issue. We talked about this a couple of years ago with Hillary. You know, you get a certain level of personality and they're able to command votes. It's the difference between like an Obama and a Hillary. There you have it. I'm done talking.
Oh, okay. Where am I? What's my name?
Ladies and gentlemen, J.M. Bell.
And here I'm looking at the same old, same old.
Yeah, right. Republican rule.
Well,
because they're so pissed that a Democratic president told them to give up the multiple wives thing. Is that this whole thing is really all about?
No.
You tell me.
No.
What happened?
The Equal Rights Amendment.
Really?
Yeah, it was coming up through the 70s, and you had Ezra Taft Benson, who was a frothy mouth Republican. He was the director of agriculture at one point.
Yeah,
and they made him the. He got up in front of the big annual meeting and said something about, you know, being Mormons or Republicans. And at the same time, they were fighting the Equal Rights Amendment. Sending my grandma out to be on Donahue and shows like that to talk about how the Equal Rights Amendment will stir up witchcraft and lesbianism. Yeah, no shit.
They say that like it's a bad thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And... Dude, I have dated in my life. I've dated maybe I think three witches.
Oh.
Not I'm not making a joke, but
there goes for the grace of God goes you, because that's awesome.
Yeah, they were all Wicca. You know, they believe in the woo woo more than I do. You know, and that's fine because their woo woo is. From time to time, you get a lecture about whether or not you got your emotional shit in place, as opposed to, you know, certain more dominant religions where somebody's going to light you on fire for time and all eternity if you're not. Jesus loved you so much that he made it so that you would burn for eternity if you didn't love him back the right way. So, you know, out here, as far as Dems go, we have a very active chair this year, this last couple of years, Daisy Thomas. She is smart. She is witty. She's kicking ass as often as the local press will let her. She's being held hostage by the behavior of those that came before her and the belief of the press that it doesn't matter how good the message. We're all just fucked anyway. So basically history and habit are stagnating everything. And she's busting her ass. One of my best friends is her executive director. And I know how hard he's working, Alex. And you know, they are banging their heads against a legacy of incompetence, inadequacy, and ultimately indifference to positive, victory-oriented behaviors and actions. And so, you know, it's easy for me, because you're talking about, and we got to take a break here in a second, so let me wrap my thought up right now, but you're having a crisis of conscience because you don't think that you're adding to the conversation. I'm having a crisis of conscience because the thing that I'm adding most often to the conversation since 2004 is, God damn it, I told you this was going to happen. And I told you so is nothing more than a trigger, not to show that perhaps you're pretty good at figuring this shit out, but no, it just means that you're an asshole because everybody else was fucking wrong. As I've said over and over and over again, I watched that fatuous gas bag ride down that fucking escalator and knew, barring a miracle, that the fucking Cheeto was going to be our president. And that miracle was Bernie Sanders, and he had no shot. And again, I'm not mad about the no shot that he had. He was fighting rules that have been in place by those that have been there for decades, making up fuck up dipshit rules. You know, but they're the ones that showed they get to make their own rules. And it's nice to see a lot of the young folks popping up out of nowhere again. And this time they are running for party positions. They are doing proper work. They are there more often, and they're changing the rules. And I like to see that. So I have faith. I have faith that things will change in Utah down the road a little bit. But right now, I think Ben's got a really good shot. Ben McAdams has a really good shot to finally beat Mia Love. Mm. Because Mia Love is full of shit and loves to lie. And Ben McAdams is just, without a doubt, one of the smartest, sweetest guys I've ever met in my life. And it comes across. You know? So, to bring this...
He can't, because if that honesty, that sincerity, that, you know, that Beto O'Rourke, you know, kind of, that you see from the very beginning, that's authentic. That authenticity is there. People, what's the word I want to use properly? I want to use the right word. People recognize it, and they are like touched by that authentic. They trust that authenticity.
Yes.
And that's why they invest in him.
When you went to college, they made you pay for it, right? Higher education costs something. It's not free. But here you are, listening to the shows on the Defenestrate Media Broadcast Network, receiving a higher education than you can get in the Ivy League, and you're listening to it all for free. The Left Show, Hold 322, you're listening to all those for nothing. Do us all a favor, freeloader. Head over to theleftshow.com and drop a few bucks with the donate button. Think about it. If these shows go away, what are you and your drum circle going to listen to while you're making patchouli incense and painting your protest signs? Limbaugh? Really? Get serious. TheLeftShow.com. Do the right thing for the left wing.
There are 10 jillion podcasts in this crazy world, but there is only one that serves a fresh pot of, hi, how do you do? I'm Tom, your host of the Coffee Cast. My mission is to make it as compelling a listen as you'll find it. I'll talk about all kinds of subjects. Sometimes I'll have guests. Good stories, because people listen to what interests them. And sometimes it's the Coffee Cast. So if you're listening as you're texting the seventh draft of a resignation message to that soon-to-be former psychopathic boss, gift shopping rotary phones for your great-great aunt, or skydiving for the first time without a parachute, whoops, welcome to the Coffee Cast. Remember, you can download a fresh Coffee Cast podcast anytime at Stitcher and iTunes, and now on demand on the Progressive Voices app and progressivevoices.com. So until the next pod gets brewed, I'll do my best to keep it fresh. The CoffeeCast Podcast.
What do you miss when you miss The Left Show?
Huckabee, being a former pastor,
yeah,
and the biggest mouthpiece for the Christian right, has proven himself time and again to not be a Christian because he believes that Levitical law is absolute and was never removed by Christ.
Right.
So he's a rabbi,
yeah,
and therefore not Christian.
Yeah, yes. He's Rabbi Huckabee.
Why not? Then he gets to eat better deli food.
Oh. Haven't the Jews been through enough?
Yeah. Oh.
That was a good point. Good point.
I am pretty sure.
I know
we got a little bit to go, but I am pretty sure Taylor just won the show.
Fresh episodes every Monday on iTunes, Stitcher, and theleftshow.com.
And we're back. I'm Wink Martindale with J.M. Bell.
Are we back a second time? Are we back? Do I have to get rid of the part from before?
Oh, okay. Well, actually, that could be like kind of like an inception, kind of like a start within a start.
We're back again.
Yes.
Look, and we're rusty, man. Yes, it's been.
We're back with J.M. Bell.
It's been a little while. So what have you seen?
Okay.
It's the second half of the show. This is where we chill out and try and.
You know the fuck out. I just there happened to be some scheduling difficulties in my work routine, so that means that we're going to put the hammer down on any kind of expenses.
Uh-oh.
So it's back to the television.
Boo.
We got one free ticket. I definitely want to go see Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
I definitely want to see that.
I had a very hard time going and doing work this morning as opposed to going and seeing that thing first thing.
Oh.
I was desperate to see it.
The matinee prices.
No, yeah. You know what? There's really no such thing anymore.
No.
It's like, I don't like going to movies late because it's usually more crowded. So if you go to a new movie first thing in the morning, Friday. Now, mostly, hang on, knows me. Mostly superhero movies. You know, you get the midnight releases and then kids go and watch it in the middle of the night.
Yep.
And I'll go Friday morning. It's like mostly, mostly empty theater.
The global opening, it could be at any time. And then all of a sudden, you know, all the chaff is brushed out of the theater.
Yeah.
And so 10 a.m. is a really good time to just stroll in.
Popcorn's fresh.
I saw this one. Yeah, Crescent Fresh. I saw this one guy was like the only guy in the theater for First Man. And I was just like, oh, that's too bad. That absolutely looks terrifyingly awesome. And having through that those moments just makes you realize what a great job NASA PR did. And just make everybody think that, yes, it's dangerous, but golly gosh, we got this tiger by the tail.
Did you see that? Did you see that movie?
Not yet. No, yeah. Not yet.
I got to see not that. Yet. I got to see Bohemian Rhapsody. I did go and see Venom.
And oh, how was Venom?
It was good.
It was good.
It wasn't great. It wasn't. I didn't walk out of there having had a religious experience. I walked out of there with a smile on my face going,
you know, I've been thinking about this, but we never really talked about this, is that you and I both have a thing for Pink Floyd, big thing for Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
A big thing for Floyd. And I finally saw Roger Waters a couple of years ago, which was, of course, he really makes a huge effort to make certain everything is reproduced about as close as possible to the original recording.
You can still tell those guitar players do not have David Gilmour's soul.
They don't have his song.
Yeah.
When you play, it took a while. I've talked a lot about this with my kids because when Wish You Were Here, it came out, I was really
really on that, you know, Floyd cusp after Dark Side of the Moon was like really red hot. And it was like really amazing, really monumentally amazing. Probably one of the greatest audio recordings, rock albums of all time. And
I literally it was kind of like listened dirt. To it this morning.
I'm sorry.
I literally listened to it this morning.
I was not with it. I was not in it. I was like going, this is a big, huge fucking disappointment. It's just like, when does the album start? You know, the thing would finish, you know, on the second side. I go, is this, did you take it out of the sleeve yet? And over time, and give it time and give it some emotional crises, this thing became my North Star. That and King Crimson Red during that period, because that was a huge, there were moments of crisis within those years. And that actually became a very cathartic album for me.
Sure.
And believe it or not, you know, that Shine On is that catharsis for me. And I don't believe we've ever talked about this, but I know you've got a thing for that.
That is, Shine On is my favorite Floyd song. Yeah. And I have collected over the years as many versions of it as I can.
Wow.
As live recordings, bootleg stuff, you know, because every once in a while, somebody will pop up at a Roger Waters show and make me enjoy something like Comfortably Numb, which, again, is one of my favorites. But no, it's sure. I can listen over and over and over again to all the parts of Shine On You Crazy Diamond. And have actually, I've cut and edited a couple of my own edits on it that play about 20 or so minutes, you know, that I like over the years. Because I like to fuck around with other people's noises. But
I actually had, here's a rule for you out there, no matter where you are. If you're like over 45, if you're over 50, whatever age you are, okay, and you're drunk, and you're at one of these shows, don't fucking sing along, okay? Because you're fucking horrible.
Yeah.
Okay? And because if you don't have bad breath, you're going to barf or something, don't fucking ruin the song and sit next to me like I'm your fucking buddy. And you're singing away, and it's just like, fucking stop, please.
This don't apparently. Fucking
do it. Let, they are paid to sing for you, all right?
Have you, okay, so I've been to two Pink Floyd tribute bands.
Wow.
I've been to Brit Floyd, and I've been to Ozzy Floyd. My preferred show is Brit Floyd, because it was in an indoor stadium, and so they got to play longer, and they did this retrospective of the entire career, you know, started out early with the I've Got a Bike, You Can Ride It If You Like.
Oh, and moved
their way through, seeing
mid-years.
Yeah, seeing Emily play.
Yep.
And
several small species of animals grooving in a cave with a pick.
Sure. And worked their way through and you know, and up into the new albums and stuff they did in the 80s. And it was all great, you know, and they did some classic hits. And for me, a guy who's never seen Floyd and will never get to see Floyd, but has worshipped, you know, at the altar of David Gilmour since I first picked up a guitar. I mean, the first song I learned on purpose, not as part of learning how to play guitar, but the first song I went and got sheet music and sat down and learned was Wish You Were Here.
Wow.
You know, and my first John, the JC, my buddy that we do the comic book show with and who's on the Left Show every week, he gave me a gift my first year I was playing guitar of the Wall songbook, you know, with the easy to read chord grids because I don't read music. And it's a huge book. And so that was, so these guys came out for their encore and did the second side of the second album of The Wall, all of it in costume with all of the stuff going on and everything. It was fucking amazing. And I was a weepy mess, you know, cause they sounded great. And what was neat was, is that they were, as I mentioned, they were playing along. with the notes. They were doing the job. It sounded fantastic. And then a couple of times, one of the guys would throw in their own little thing, their own little flourish. You know? Mm-hmm. These guys were fucking good.
They knew their shit.
Yeah, and so they were doing the backside of Comfortably Numb. And David Gilmour has, I am trying desperately to open a Gatorade, and it will not fucking open. And I am ridiculously strong.
Whilst you do that, I think one of the things that I, maybe that Lisa and I have been successful in, has been the proper introduction of the proper music to the children.
There you go.
Now, we started off, I mean, they always listen to our stuff, but we then introduced Sergeant Peppers, and they are Stone Beatles heads, okay? But when it came to Floyd, I made them sit down and we watched the documentary on the making of I Wish You Were Here, which is the story behind their original band member, Syd Barrett, who with increasing, as he was taking more psychotropic or hallucinogenic drugs, he already had issues with mental illness. Whatever was happening with him accelerated that to the point where they had brought in David Gilmour sometime during, 68, 69, and it was becoming literally untenable for them to be playing with Syd. Syd was just, they were not glued together as a band anymore. Syd disappeared or left or was asked to leave. And when they, and to me, Dark Side of the Moon, Wish You Were Here, and The Wall are three stories about Syd. Dark Side of the Moon talks about the detachment, mental, when individuals are, you're not there on the same plane with other people. Maybe we're talking about mental illness. Maybe we're talking about just the human condition. Wish You Were Here is about the loss of Syd. The Wall is about being in Syd's head and putting up that wall and separating you from the rest of humanity. That's just my take. But when we were watching the documentary, there was that moment where they were mixing or recording it, and this homeless guy shows up, who was actually Syd, was in the studio, and it wasn't until he had left. Of course, the band is just kind of like, who's this guy? What's happening? What's going on here? They just, okay, let's just play along with this. And he leaves, and they realize to their horror that this guy with a shaved head, shaved eyebrows, overweight, just doesn't look like their friend anymore. That was Syd. And Syd was there in the studio for just a brief amount of time as they were doing an album about him.
Right.
That's profound. I mean, it's just, how do these things happen? But they did. But that's my litany on that. Please. I'd like to hear from you.
Well, I think I'm with you on the first two. I think The Wall was more of a narcissistic need for Roger Waters to talk about the fact that his dad was dead and he didn't like going to school.
Are you on the same thing about Roger because he is megalomaniacal and ultra controlling?
Yeah.
I've heard about all the whole stories about how the band came to blows in the 80s and they split and Roger got the pig and Roger got The Wall. And the band got the name and the rest of the catalog.
Well, basically, the way that it's put together is there's a partnership between the four surviving members. Now there's only two, or, well, yeah, three? Yeah. Anyway, yeah, and so it's...
The keyboard guy.
Nick Mason.
Nick's the drummer. Yeah.
So anyway, the everything they put together with a corporation with everybody having an equal vote. So every time David and the guys wanted to do an album, they would vote, and it was always 3-1. So they'd go make a Pink Floyd album, and Roger Waters sued a few times and was basically like, no, your contract, this is what you guys set up, idiot. And it was like, I like Radio Chaos. I like Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking. I like the music Roger Waters does. Right. And when I listen to his stuff,
difficult.
I hear the wall every time. It doesn't matter which of his new albums, he knows six licks, you know, and four of them are always going to be on something that he's working on. That doesn't make him any less brilliant, you know, but it he comes across like an asshole. And that's why I've never really, watch any interview and it's like David Gilmour is a nice guy who kind of ruefully shakes his head and he's like, well, things are pretty fucked up and I really wish they weren't, but here we are. And Roger Waters is all, it's everybody's fault but mine. Everyone but me. Why can't they bow down to my brilliance? Yeah, no shit. So, you know, my dad's dead. Yeah, you and millions of other kids, goddammit. So.
These guys, I have friends who are also Waters fans. They're on, okay, on the side of the divorce, they got on the Waters side.
Right.
And it's, you can't see it. You don't see what an asshole he is. No. No, he's really great. He's just the rest of the band. Yeah, I'm not really that into it. It's just got the fucking soul of the band. What are you talking about? It's just like Roger is not the band. Roger drives a lot of the shit. Yes, but he is not the entirety of the band.
Because you got David Gilmour singing the high parts. And look, man, I make no mistake. I have listened to David Gilmour's solo shit. Roger Waters' solo shit is better than most of David Gilmour's solo shit. The difference is that in every David Gilmour song, he shuts the fuck up and plays guitar. And you're like, yeah, there it is. There it is. With Roger Waters, I don't get that. I don't get the payoff. You know? I mean, that's really what it is. Is it's like, they're both very talented guys. Waters can put together a concept album like nobody's fucking business.
Sure.
Right. Sure. But David Gilmour plays guitar like God himself was like, I need a guitar player. Here's what we base everyone else on.
We were leaving Chicago and we had hired these two guys to help us pack out our stuff in a U-Haul. And one of the guys had come across our albums that we were, they're helping out. And he just noticed I had a bunch of Floyd stuff. He just stops me. And I don't know where this guy came from. He looks like he had a really hard life. And he just all of a sudden started waxing eloquently about David Gilmour. He just goes, and it isn't just the band. It's just his playing just really reaches into your soul. And I was like, really? That's what it does to people. You know, and this guy, this complete stranger that I've never met before, is commenting on something we both have an affinity for.
Yeah.
And I was really taken by that. It was just like, okay, so it's just not me. It's just, yeah, people really do. It really hits them. And hits them in places that you wouldn't expect. And that's the best thing about music. And that's the best thing about them. And believe me, it took some time. It took me some time, but eventually, it probably is on the top five for me still after all these years.
Oh, sure.
It's still there. Yeah, I mean, it will be. I mean, it's eternal. And I think my kids appreciate it. Maybe not as much as I do, but, it was my era, so when I was just a little kid.
I have tried, I think I've told you this story before. I had somehow passed down to me in the mid-80s an 8-track player.
And oh, my God.
And I went to the Deseret Industries, which is the Mormon version of the Goodwill.
Yeah.
And they...
It was Head East. You had stuck inside the player was Head East. Ain't never been no reason.
So I go to the Mormon Goodwill and I find anything palatable and it's all an 8-track. And so there's not much for me. And at this particular point in my life, the majority of what I listened to was European synth pop, industrial and some goth stuff, like the Thompson twins and Skinny Puppy. Anyway, they have four copies of The Wall, a copy of Wish You Were Here, a copy of Dark Side, you know, and then some other stuff. And they went through, and what I did is, and I had this stack of eight tracks, four being The Wall, copies of The Wall. And I put the first one in that eight track and set the volume kind of low. And do you remember how eight tracks work? They just kept playing and playing and playing and playing.
Yeah. Endless loop.
Yep. And the first one lasted about 6 months. The second one lasted about the same. The third one lasted almost a year, you know. And then the fourth one lasted until the eight track player broke. I had seven other or four other albums I never listened to on that eight track. It was The Wall for four straight years.
Oh my God.
Three straight years. And that was just in my room. I mean, you know, I would turn that off and flip on my cassette player because I'm, you know, but when I went to bed or when I was just sitting there reading or whatever, it was the eight track was on and The Wall was playing. Flash forward to a few months ago, I'm driving down the canyon with my girlfriend. Who is a little younger than me, I will admit. 10 years or so. And I flip on, you know, some Pink Floyd. And the questions start. What is this, like, I mean, like the one whole story?
Well, let me explain this to you. Way back when, in the era of concept rock.
No, it's just more like buckle the fuck up, here we go. You know, and then a few minutes later dropped her off and it was The Wall again for the next few days. Could not get enough of it. Couldn't stop singing it in my head. And in that one, most of the memorable parts are Roger Waters. Right. You know, that's what exactly. I mean. The guy is brilliant, but you take David Gilmour away from him and he is doing the same thing over and over and over again. Brilliantly. Mm-hmm. But it's still the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a Roomba lacking a laser-guided director to get you out of that room. But unfortunately, Roger doesn't have that and just keeps going in circles. The end. Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody. Please drive safely. But I haven't seen... the only thing that we've indulged in lately was, if you can catch it, something that's very, very tense is actually called Bodyguard on Netflix. It's a BBC thing.
No, not a Kevin Costner.
I always think of that. I will always love you. Nah, this is tense. This is a Afghan war vet. This is supposed to take place in 21st century London in 2018. And it's a cop that helps defuse a potential suicide bomber on a train near London. And he becomes the private, he becomes the bodyguard of one of the cabinet ministers in government. And what happens next is that everybody has their knives out for this cabinet minister. And you don't really know about him. You don't know. You're not really, really sure if he's in on it too, or what exactly takes place, but it's really worth it. Really pretty amazing.
Well, then I will, as we, at least for me on my end, wrap this up. Cause we're about to hit an hour. But.
And that's good enough.
It's, you know what? It's late and I'm tired, but, Altered Carbon. Have you checked that out? I'm pretty sure it's on Netflix. Altered Carbon is brilliant. Super brilliant. Oh, shit.
I have heard of that.
Yeah, it is good. It is very good. I mean, it is exceptionally good. And it's basically... And
the third season of Daredevil just broke, so...
Oh, yeah, I finished that already.
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched that in a day and a half.
Maddie's got a target on his back?
Yep. Well... Yep. Wilson Fisk knows who he is.
Yep. When you're the king of Hell's Kitchen, you got to protect that crown.
Yeah. Have you seen it yet?
No, I haven't. Dude, you got haven't seen it yet. I'm a very, very bad boy.
Yeah, because that one, look, man, season one was great. Season two was great. Season three is something altogether better.
Oh, great. That's terrific. Which is really shitty, considering that they canceled Luke Cage and Iron Fist.
It's like Iron Fist finally figured out how to be a good show. Luke Cage was already a very good show.
Yeah, already was.
Yep.
Yep. So let's do this. We can table this conversation for another time.
Sure.
Perhaps you're up for this before the election. That's great. And we'll, you know, we'll definitely do that. But man, it just, thank you so much for wanting to do this and having the patience for it.
Always. You're my Huckleberry.